going on down there?
Aaron, when I tap a swamp, what comes out?
Black mana, generally.
Thank you. That's also what came
out.
But
there are other cards that are typed a swamp that you could tap for other colored mana.
Well, black mana is what came out of my mouth earlier this morning. So.
Okay.
I looked for red.
Have you been tapping a bunch of swamps lately?
I think that something inside me was a swamp, at least briefly.
Okay. That makes some sense.
I had one of those special dual lands where it's typed swamp and lung at the same time.
Okay. Yeah, it's rarely printed.
Yeah, no, I'm a big time collector. You know, I play slabbed only. Boy howdy, it's really fun being into multiple card games and remaining still just adjacent enough that I'm not playing the ones that are getting the most Pokemon'd. Like, I feel bad for everyone I know who's really enjoying Riftbound and would love the idea of being able to purchase Riftbound cards, but they can't because they're all gone.
Yeah, I see those and just think of that first Gen Con with Lorcana and how just absolutely massively crazy that was, where they were like clipping the plastic corners of your badge so that you could only get one box a day. And somebody seeing me with an unclipped badge being like, hey, man, I will pay you $40 to go wait in this line to get another box. And just, man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I've noticed it's a pattern with Flesh and Blood players to sometimes be a bit obnoxious about how Flesh and Blood seems to be doing a bit better than some other games at the moment. But it is really nice that, like, a new Flesh and Blood set right now, it generally means, like, I can't wait for the pre-orders to go up and then purchase the cards that I would like.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, that's about it. We haven't fully lost speculators, but I think that's it's tapered off to a slightly healthier point. Because there is still a cross-mingling in Flesh and Blood of highest rarity with highest efficacy. But,
Isn't Flesh and Blood not, like, there's no... Well, I guess it does have the premium printings, but it's not, like, limited printings? Or is that a different game that was like, yeah, we're going to print it into Oblivion, but you may not get the gold fancy foil, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, there was a switch up. Flesh and Blood originally was doing first printing followed by unlimited printing. And first printing would have a slightly different look to its rarity symbols, and it would have cold foils. And then unlimited printing would not have any cold foils, it would just have rainbow foils. But then that led to the crash of Monarch, which was, I think, four sets in, which almost killed the game. And definitely killed a lot of the speculators being interested in the game. But now they're at a point where they just do one print run of each set. Their printing, I think, is done in Belgium. They don't seem to have too much trouble, as far as I can tell, having enough product out now. Apparently there was a hiccup this year before I got into it with the Pirate set. But no, like they are trying to keep cards in circulation while maintaining certain levels of collectability and chase. But then if cards are highly necessary game pieces and also very gated off by rarity, they at least try to do reprints in the same, I guess, window of 12 months in prize packs and pre-con decks or whatever, or in future sets. But the reprints are never downshifted. Which is frustrating to some, but they also have had demonstrable impact on pricing, where like an $80 card got reprinted at the exact same rarity, but now is a $40 card. A $90 equipment got reprinted at the same rarity and with different artwork, and the new artwork version is now as low as like $20. So something's working in there. But I can start talking about Flesh and Blood a whole lot, I've discovered, if given the chance. And I recognize that in myself, much like someone who's been bitten by a zombie recognizes itchy tasty. So I'm going to catch myself there and say, hello, welcome to WTF at TFW. So glad to have you all with us. My name is Chris Vangelis on the internet, and this episode I'm hosting. That's right. This is episode 654, and I'm joined by Aaron Axsmith of Dahir InShot streaming fame.
I've managed to point a few people at it, and they're like, oh, what? That's a long stream. I'm like, yes, it was.
Mm-hmm. And boy, it was magical how, like, there was a moment where I was like, you know, I think Aaron's going to be pretty chill this stream. And then, like, we hit that one that made you get up and get a hard liquor.
Get alcohol.
And I was like,
yep.
Oh, no, we found it. Yep. We found the spot. Okay, here we go.
It wasn't like it was a specific one. It was just the stack, you know.
Yeah.
It was slightly more, slightly more, slightly more, and then away it goes.
Yeah. Well, what I remember is this was, it kind of was a sudden escalation, too, because it was getting into, like, road work. I think it was that giant road work mm-hmm. monstrosity, and
yeah.
that was too close to home. And you're like, no, 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 no. For those who don't know, I'm sure we can link it in the thread, but we did a stream because Aaron hit a very impressive threshold on Extra Life fundraising. We opened up by taking a look at Neom as a warm-up and kind of laying into that a little bit, and then went into a very large Dahir InShot playlist where, as I said, like, it started off, Aaron was keeping some pretty good control, and then it just escalated and ramped and stacked and eventually got into the fun stuff. And then mm-hmm. ended on, it turned out, because I tried to make a list of just all the English language videos, and it turns out Dahir InShot has a specifically never in English language set of military hardware videos, which were incredibly mm-hmm. funny, because
yeah,
like it was those bunker busters that spit up like a little like blowpipe slingshot to throw a mortar,
yeah.
Or the camouflage solar panel tank tread that just starts like pushing Bugs Bunny missiles into a launcher one after another.
yeah, that the baby tanks.
Oh yeah,
that are clearly better than the like M1 A2 Abrams United States tanks. No. You see, we need these little baby tanks.
No, the baby tanks are better because they have a fusion cannon in the back.
Yeah, and one of our brave soldiers could potentially be eaten by one a little bit to get them home safe.
I realized, like, especially after the fact, thinking about that little movie they did, I was like, the only reason the baby tanks won is because they could suddenly deploy an anime gun out of the back that had infinity rocket ammo in it. And I was like, well, yeah, if you build anything that has Megatron's fusion cannon in the back, then yes, you win.
Like, yeah, it makes perfect sense so long as you ignore physics.
Yeah.
So, you know, here we are.
Because the thing, it was Megatron's fusion cannon, because it could one-shot an Abram, and it could one-shot an Apache helicopter, and I'm like, at that size, mm-hmm. that just seems like a reasonable metaphor to draw, right? It's strong on the power of a black hole to shoot much larger objects. But yeah, do check that out if you haven't. The VOD is up. It's been chapter marked to some degree. One of my favorite parts of the Neom thing was when you pulled up the satellite camera and went like, notice the lack of anything built on that large flat mm-hmm. tract of desert.
Yep. Let's just make miles and miles of flat tract desert in a straight line. What are we doing with it? I don't know. I think there's a little bit of like clearly container housing maybe set up as in some portion of it for starting
like portables
work, maybe,
and like a paved road sort of
a road called out
but yeah, please do check out that stream. It was a lot of fun. I had a lot of fun doing it, and I didn't have to do the hard bit, which is actually have a serious professional opinion on a lot of that stuff. I still got mad a couple times too, because Dahir InShot is mm-hmm. good at that. I think that is kind of what they do. I did have a question from one or two folks in my life who were like, so what have they actually done that manifested in the real world? And I was like, I don't know. The only reason I don't think this is a massive rage bait plot is some of these videos are 14 years old and they've also updated this year. Mm-hmm. So like, I think that,
yeah, I've got the feeling that the Harin shots, like that all of that is like you can be a one man design firm.
Yeah.
And get a bunch of like stock assets and then generate your own stuff. I would be very surprised if maybe two or three people have seen like the earthquake bed thing, because that's somewhat person size, like a thing that a person could make. You know, the road equipment would be difficult for somebody to be like, I'm gonna make this myself for feasibility studies type of thing.
But then they'd be testing it on themselves and they would be dead now. So like,
well, I mean, the earthquake bed, like you don't have to get in the earthquake bed. You could have a mass simulator.
Put a crash dummy in there and you just watch the limbs fly off. And you're like, that's fine.
Some of that big equipment or the various restaurants, grocery store things, like that's not like there's a lot of money. The grocery store where it pulls you at your whole car in sideways.
Yeah. Into an enclosed space with one retail worker.
Right.
Like, I would bet if there's anything that manifested, I bet that one version, slightly smaller, of one of those giant vertical, like, Ferris wheel things that product is supposed to sit on, maybe one of those existed at some point. Just, like, full of baskets of nothing.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, that giant, like, that vertical Ferris wheel thing, there's a company that makes those, and I've used them in places where it's, like, archival.
Yeah.
Where you've got a bunch of record books that sit in this big vertical storinator thing because, hey, it's not infrequently, but like, you know, there's one or two people that handle all of the access to this, so it doesn't need to be an open library situation. Mm-hmm. So we can organize it and protect it this way. Away you go.
Oh, I just mean I bet Dahir Inshot, whoever they are, might have put a lot of effort into building one of something someone else can do better, mm-hmm. and then felt very proud of themselves, and maybe that was about it. That's just my hypothesis. I mean, I would love it if they built one of those giant mono gyroscopic bus saucers. I love the idea of someone trying to act like one of those things, actually attempting to be driven on a test course once. Anyway, I'm teasering this video too hard. We should probably move on, because today we are going to tackle a big pile of listener questions. I had a list dating back to summer of 2024, and we are going to be nailing a good most of them. I would like to do right by folks who sent stuff in, and with our, you know, our speed bumps and road bumps, and then me getting this terrifying throat sickness, where like a brand new color came out of me today out of nowhere, but maybe it's the last one. I want to go through some of these. So this is in chronological order, but I didn't note the dates down because I was like, at a certain point that becomes actually distracting. So we're going to have some, though. At least one of these I think has a follow up, because, you know, an event happened that altered the question a bit. But to start off, we got a couple here from Corito, who's hoping that 2024 has treated us well so far in June, I believe. Not really me, actually. I think that might have been while we were still dealing with my mom's stuff, because we were, that one I don't think was treating me very well. Corito says, breathes in, screams externally. I, Corito Prime, come back to you with a trio of questions. Hopefully you can have some fun with them. Number one, my first question is a repeat of one I asked a long time ago that I think the merits being asked again, which is, with how better 3D printing seems to get every year, what's a custom 3D print piece that you would like to have for your toy collection, Transformers or otherwise? For me, since Armada Prime and Hotshot are out, Red Alert is supposedly on the way. Dated. I would love to have the rotating character select chair from the PS2 game. Yeah, actually. Also, as a HasLab Omega Prime backer, I'd love it if someone made a dummy body, and they did, to put all the super parts on. That dummy body on eBay, if it wasn't like $60, I would have got it already, and I totally see why it's, because it's a very detailed-looking thing that actually is articulated. But I would like to pick up that dummy body sometime. But with where 3D printing is at now, Aaron, is there anything for your toy collection where you're kind of like, why has no one made this yet? Why doesn't someone print me one?
I was thinking about this earlier when you put up the list of questions, and the thought that I had is, I remember, wasn't it one of the first sets that came out was like a handshake? Like Classics Prime and was it Rodimus or something? Shake hands.
Oh, yeah. I know what you
like
mean.
Weird plug things. I think something like that, where it's, if there's more characterful interactions that have happened, like a parts or pieces that lets you do that with the modern toys. That's the sort of thing that I still to this day like the, you know, the City Commander style stuff where it seemed like Hasbro should have been perfectly happy with it, of like, hey, this requires you to have our stuff to do anything with this. Like, if you bought this but don't have our toys, they're useless chunks of plastic. Mm-hmm. That's why, like, sometimes I maybe roll my eyes at gap filler, hole filler kits, but it's like, hey, I like those in that you have to have had the thing, and it's, I feel like those are a whole lot more protectable.
Yeah, the DNA design it's like, space
hey,
now.
Yeah, the DNA design style stuff, yeah. Rather than the, oh, we just made our own versions of all the Dinobots just 7% larger and with 15% different faces, so it's arguable that they're not the same. Ha ha, suck it. Type of things. Plus, that seems like where a good 3D printing thing could be. Like, you know, something like a handshake, you could be like, hey, here's the half of each of the hands. You know, here's your Optimus Prime hand, and then you have a Onyx Prime hand piece, and you can just whoop, and away they go.
Yeah, just handshake pieces for the 13 primes to do the photo op with all of them. That'd be kind of fun.
Yeah. And even, you know, saying the 13 primes, it'd be neat if there was, like, whatever the ultimate device is at the end that supposedly each of them with their parts is going to make.
Oh,
but
yeah.
having five or six of the primes now at this point, it would be very difficult to see how these all together come together as a cohesive thing.
Evo Fusion.
Where is... Yeah. Yeah, they're all a bunch of 5mm pegs and...
I'm pretty sure. Pretty
nope.
sure that's what it's going to be, actually. 5mm stuff.
Yeah. One of them is going to have some block that's just a bunch of 5mm holes.
Yeah.
Like, at a certain point. I think... I don't have...
Well, they're all guns and sticks so far, right? For the most part.
Right. Yeah. Well, and a book. And a quill.
Yeah, the book.
Or the quill, maybe. Not the book, but... You know. Something that, like, hey, when all of that comes out, I think would be a good thing of, like, hey, here's, you know, if there is ever a time for that, hey, here's a random chunk of a filler thing, like a work box for Devastator hips. Something that's like, hey, here's how all of them come together. Or even just, like, the some parts shrunk, some parts grew. Here's all the things together as a toy, but that's all. It's all into wild speculation territory.
Yeah. For me, my main answer is actually just, and I think this is this is actually feasible, but we need the right person or people who have the right know-how and interest and the right equipment. And I think that's like we're trying to get all these grid lines to waffle together still into the right pancake mm-hmm. shape. But I want every known breakable toy mechanism to have 3D printable replacement parts.
That'd be great. That feels like a thing that, like, if Hasbro really loved the consumer, type of thing.
I feel like it's something that the hobbyist can solve. We just, like I said, we need the right alignment of people, personalities, and available technology for those people and personalities to have the person who takes satisfaction in designing replacement parts for every famous toy break, basically. Internal gimmicks obviously being the focus, because I think that's stuff that 3D printing feels like it's made for. Like, oh, this gear commonly breaks. The C-clip commonly breaks. Diaclone reboot, big powers, internal crotch parts that self-grind depending on which one it is, right?
Yeah. The rough thing with a bunch of that, though, comes down to, like, fidelity of the ability to print things and the fact that, like, that is something that maybe, you know, if somebody that is a small business size maker, I feel like could make those, having some of that stuff as, like, I get myself a Bamboo Labs printer and then try to print that, I'm never going to be able to make the fidelity or precision to make those parts good without wasting a whole lot more versus, you know, somebody that has 8 or 10 resin printers and knows how to tune them for this stuff.
Oh, it would be a workshop scenario, and it would be this would be something that would start hobby, like, you know, hypothetically, right? I think this thing starts hobby style and then becomes a small business that is built on the back of, like, a sort of fun form of right to repair. It's just that I feel the technologies exist and the example pieces exist for this to exist, but we don't have the right alignment of people. Like, for instance, am I the right person? No, I just have the idea. I don't know how to 3D print things, nor do I have the space to even have a small 3D printer safely set up. But I feel like it's not unreasonable that someday the right collective could come together and form, like, this little workshop collective where it's like, we are the toy repair folks. We are Santa's real workshop. We're like, you know, start off with, you know, we have a little package that is all the repair parts you need for Mask Switchblade. Here's all the repair parts for Metroplex's waist. Here's new gears for Skylynx's walking mechanism. And, like, just sort of growing from there. I think that to me is the dream of 3D printing in Transformers, at least toy collection stuff. But also the rotating character select chair from the PS2 game would be pretty baller. That'd be pretty sick. Especially if the rotation factor had, like, a cool clicky joint where it's like, you know, like, it's not like a hard vibrating click. It's just got that nice tinny one, that buttery tinny one. Question two, we now have two examples this year, 2024, of Hasbro down a scale from retail release of a premium figure with the legacy version of Missing Link Optimus. Legacy Toy Optimus and the Studio Series 86 Optimus, who is kind of like a downscaled MP44. So yeah, it's like something that exists on the high end and a reasonable down priced version of it now also exists. So my question is, what other Transformer from a premium line like Masterpiece or HasLab would you like to see get a retail release? And that's an interesting question, because, you know, we've had one more HasLab come and go and get funded. I definitely think, like, you know, this is like the idea of, like, can you release just a chunk of a HasLab on its own is going to, I think, come up later in the series of questions. But as far as a downscale thing, I would actually, you know, and this exists in third party and this can't really exist in mainline, but I would love to see how the designer team of MP36 Megatron would downscale that design in, like, 2026. As a leader class, just as, like, a thought experiment. Like, I'd love to, like, having seen Studio Series 86 Optimus now, I am so curious, like, how many tricks would translate in what ways to something that's leader class. I think that'd be kind of cool. Unfortunately, it'd turn into an illegal shape, but you know, leave that part out.
I mean, that's always one of those rough things because, you know, I remember some of the early Masterpiece things that I've touched that, you know, seem like there were good places to potentially lose some of that. Hey, you take this thing, you flip it left, you rotate it 9 degrees, you flip it right with this extra part, and you rotate it 37 degrees, and then you accordion all of those things back together to get a slightly sleeker look versus, like, hey, if you were doing this for mainline retail, I make air quotes, you'd do it a completely different way. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Like, the unfortunate thing is, I feel like so much, like, you know, I have gotten my, you know, the God Bomber to go with my God Ginrai and enjoy that. But that's been, like, since then, I can't even tell you what my most recent Masterpiece purchase was. Just because so much of it was like, hey, we're doing Optimus for the third time or fourth time or whatever, and or, you know, different characters that they don't have the same attachment to, and they continue to be pricey.
Yeah.
So, like, anything from a premium line made more retail would be neat. But I don't know if I could necessarily pick something off the top of my head. It's like, hey, this could use a good downscale.
I actually would say that I would love to see more G1 Toy Universe things as Deluxes and Voyagers. Kind of like, in this case, mm-hmm. instead of talking about Masterpiece, I would like to see more pillaging from Missing Link, actually, because I think that could be fun. I don't think that G1 Toy Optimus from Legacy took anything away from Missing Link Optimus existing, or vice versa. And it would be sort of cool to see more of, like, how many more of those could feasibly exist in mainline in that similar style. Because Missing Link is a fascinating line. But the mm-hmm. The fact that, like, you know, some toys, I think, just couldn't make the jump to mainline the way that G1 Optimus does, but I think some could. And I don't know, it'd be fun to look at, like, you know, budget Missing Link, Missing Dollar, you know, whatever. I think that could be kind of neat. Obviously, like, there were some other examples given, you know, like studio series has kind of eaten Movie Masterpiece's lunch in a few places. I think that's actually just a thing that's taken place. But obviously another one that was presented here, that, you know, Titan Unicron, I think that'd be kind of cool to see. Again, hypothetically, like, I'm not going to make the case for it being sellable, but it would be neat to see a take two on Unicron with everything learned from HasLab Unicron done as a Titan, given that I think Titans, since Unicron came out, took lessons from HasLab Unicron in very subtle, specific ways, like the way that some joints work compared to other joints, etc. So it's a cool thought experiment. It's one that I would love to be able to talk about more without the concept of thinking of, like, but how do I buy it, right? How does it fit into retail? Like, I think that's stuff you got to leave aside. Mm-hmm. And it's more like, think of it as creative limitation only, you know, like for MP36 yeah. Megatron, I'm not going to try to litigate or invent a way that they sneak a gun Megatron G1 toy into a modern line. I think that's a long, tiresome conversation that got even more tiresome when I stopped looking at it. It sounds like, but as a thought experiment, I think the idea of downscaling that toy is interesting. I still haven't picked up the New Age kind of thing that kind of did that already this past year, but I heard it was pretty good. Anyway, question number three, less of a question, more something I've been thinking about. Some episodes ago, I asked about the possibility of getting Armada, Jetfire, and Overload, and I brought up the idea of making them a Commander Class 2-pack, and the idea popped into my head. If they did that, what if they also gave Overload a torso mode that could combine with Jetfire? That way you could sell it as a combiner rather than an upgrade pack. Gives you an extra use for the trailer pants once you have Jetfire. Stealth fourth question, if Hasbro doesn't make a Jetfire, how long until a third party does? So I think the idea of third party toys that are full figures filling in gaps for Legacy is not unreasonable, but it does seem to be farther off than it ever was before, when there seems yeah. to be way more of a palette for upgrade kits that maybe happen to be almost a figure anyway, but it's that very subtle difference, right?
I think as far as Hasbro, I feel like if they were to make that, you know, new Commander or Titan as the combination for Armada Prime, I feel like they'd almost have to do something like that.
Yeah.
As the sales, because they don't want to be selling an item, because I know that it's been brought up on some of their lives before, where it's like, hey, we don't like making things that are just, you know, you must have product A to have product B be worth it, especially when product B is in similar price range as product A.
Yeah, and they, like, they've done it in a way that, where they haven't even advertised it, but like Menasor and, from what I'm told, Superion, Motormaster and Silverbolt,
mm-hmm.
basically are Super Mode toys when you just have them on their own. They just don't advertise that feature, which I think is bonkers. They just they should be advertising that. But
I mean, because because I'm still waiting on the last aerial bot to show up to complete Superion. Like, and he stands there and he does everything that a giant robot toy could do. So it's, you know, that's the thing is, you know, those commanders are releasing as complete toys. They're not releasing as, and then you buy all these others.
Yeah.
You know, the way that like old school G1 combiners released and you got, you know, the fists and feet and extra parts and they just sat in a box and until you had the four other limb guys that were relatively universal. But it was like, hey, this is stuff that's easy to lose. You know, hey, is this still a toy if you lose parts of it or whatever, is definitely something that's in their design ethos. So making Overlord a torso to combine with Jetfire so you don't have to have Prime seems like a thing that they might do. Plus, he's got the build to potentially do that.
He's
anyway.
A block, so like it's not like the biggest stretch in the world. And I'm always of the opinion, if they add a function, for the most part, I'm like, oh, hell yeah, it does something new, you know? Like, I know there's a through line in modern discourse of like, but why does he turn into a torso as well when he never did that in the show? Where he sometimes that version of conversation, hopefully someone listening to this, you know, knows what I'm talking about, where like the natural reaction is to ask this like, you know, grade two student looking at Santa Claus in the mall, like, well, if he's in the mall, why does he not just bring the presents here? It's like, I don't know. It's like, why would Overlord turn into a torso? For play value, and because it's interesting, right?
For like for play value, you just never saw him do it in the show because he never had the opportunity to.
Yeah, like with like Transformer having new function, I'm just always like, nah, hell yeah, let's do it. Like, if there's minor aesthetic loss, you know, I kind of get it, you know, putting a funny taste in your mouth. But for the most part, I'm just like, look, just if it's doing a new thing, how novel is that right now? Like, we are in a point with Transformers where like, hey, that guy does something kind of fresh is like incredibly novel now. What's one of the what's possibly, I don't have the data, but I'm curious, possibly one of the most purchased by adults Cyberworld toys, it's Skybite as a car, because that's really fresh and a reference. So, like, I think that kind of thing would just land happily right now. Anyway, moving on to the next question. This one's from Kevin Sig, and this is what I was alluding to earlier. Kevin Sig's question reads, got a bit of a hypothetical. How would you feel about Hasbro reusing one of the HasLab molds? Since the initial campaign paid for development costs, this seems feasible. This could go in two directions. One, just a re-release with similar price and just the same add-ons, maybe accounting for inflation. That's what Titan class re-releases are right now. Or Hasbro finds a way to remake the release into a cheaper version, releases it at retail, minus figures or features. I understand collectors of a rare piece would be up in arms, but then there's always someone who lives under a rock that hears about a campaign only years afterwards would love another chance. So have at it, WTF crew, tell me what you think. And Kevin did subsequently follow up to point out, because this announcement happened after the fact, that this has now happened. There is a HasLab Hiss tank in Arctic repaint colors with no electronics that is coming out at make-to-order retail, which, you know, retail might be a funny word to use for that. I'm just not really sure where to slot that in. But my understanding is it's like the Dragon Man Marvel Legends, where it's a made-to-order pre-order. What really is retail anyway nowadays, et cetera, et cetera. But that door does seem to be open, so it's very interesting to think about. as far as the rarity thing, I don't care. And nor would I have that much patience for someone who says, doesn't it suck that my rare thing only I could have is now haveable by someone else? It's like, no, because it's probably coming in a box that's different. So you still got to have a one of a kind box. I hope you didn't throw it out.
Yeah.
Shrug.
I don't feel like I have ownership of any of the HasLabs that I've gotten in on. I also don't know necessarily if I feel as if I would be owed HasLabs that I didn't get in on, just because I understand the ephemera of it.
Yeah.
Like, FOMO's a thing that sucks, and things like Magic the Gathering Secret Layers have done a great job of showing how potentially manufactured some of that nonsense is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if like, you know, if they had a similar price and add-ons, but for a modern, like, hey, you know, now we're making profit on it because we're not having to cut molds or do whatever. Okay, fine, good on them. If there's another wave in that, it's probably something that would be difficult for them to come up with the use case for it, for the like muckety mucks up the food chain, because like, hey, you know, we got 10,000 people to buy it. We want to do it again. Okay, are those 10,000 people that clearly wanted it before going to buy another one? Probably not. So how many we're going to make? Maybe 2,000, we hope.
Yeah, that is also going to be...
But that gets into, like, the business side of it versus, like, you
that's
know,
also the fork in the road.
Finding a way to do it cheaper.
Is it a re-release or is it a recolor, right? And if it's a re-release, then I also would say, like, it's very likely going to be a tiny production run if it's a re-release. And also I agree, like, I think in most cases, you know, most reasonable people aren't going to be like, I missed it, but I'm owed this as a fan, but it's going to be like, oh, it sucks that I missed it, and I know the toolings exist, it'd be cool if they ran them again, and it would. I would anticipate it would be as expensive, if not maybe even slightly more, because
It'd probably be more expensive, and,
yeah,
like, so you wouldn't have your tool manufacturing costs, which ain't cheap, but you'd still have your setup costs. You know, you got to take a plant down for a day or two in order to put this in place. So you've got, like, you know, that's the thing. Talking breakpoints that prototype fan panel that I'm still to say that I'm going to make it. You know, if it costs you $20,000 to set up the plant to make a thing, that first one costs $20,000. Like, you know, if you only have 10 people that want it, that setup cost is cut across a much smaller numbers. That's some of the break points of manufacturing things. So again, yeah, you know, if you're making 20% of what you did before, each of those is having to eat five times the set up and fixed costs of making the thing, of designing new packaging, all of that nonsense. So, like, there's maybe theoretically a business case if there was a good repaint opportunity for it. You know, I've seen people, and that's a funny dichotomy too. Of I've seen people say, like, oh, I wish I could get, you know, the HasLab Unicron, because that was the big first one.
Yeah.
But then it's like, okay, well, there are people that are selling them right now for three or four times what it cost originally. And like, oh, that's way too much. I'm like, if it's three or four times is way too much, then how much, like, do you want it for less than what it originally retailed? Because as the type of toy that it is, it's never going to be less than it was at retail.
No.
So it's always going to be more. So you just want one originally at retail, well, then you need a time machine.
Yeah, that's, I wish, like, I could have, that's like, well, darn, I wish I could be allowed to see Monty Python live at the Hollywood Bowl, because I wasn't alive for it. And it's like, well,
yeah,
unfortunately. But, and Unicron's also the specific case where it's like, if they did a new run of Unicron this year, right, it's going to be at least, my ballpark, it's going to be at least $800, at least. Because, and this applies to all of this stuff from my, you know, my layman's understanding, obviously. So I'm, you know, feel free to correct me if you know better. But, like, the one thing that has definitely not gotten cheaper since the turn of the decade, and in fact has been part of a global disaster of sorts, has been freight and shipping and delivery and warehousing. And overseas interactions between the bunch, especially when the end destination is the United States of America. So, like, Unicron especially, I anticipate if that ever gets another release, it will be $1,000, because that's a nice round number, right? So if you see someone selling one for $1,500, it is a $500 gamble that is also, at this point, a 33% gamble on whether a re-release will happen. So that's kind of up to you. Mm-hmm. That's your business, right? But those are the numbers you are now playing with if you are talking about Unicron. Obviously, the most popular Transformers one is Splendid Yellow Convoy, which is Rid Optimus, no Ultra Magnus, no extra parts, and in yellow. I think that is the most feasible Transformers one that exists right now because the interest exists. It has been confirmed or at least resonated by people on the design team. So internally, it is known what it is and that it's a concept. I think that is a very likely one to happen as of seeing this Arctic Hiss go up. But I would also say it is very likely to be a make-to-order, pre-order thing like Dragon Man and the Arctic Hiss. So it's going to be one where if they do it, you have to be prepared for that to be an upfront spend that you decide very early and do as a classic pre-order, which is something that I'm part of the demographic now. We're doing classic pre-orders has kind of fallen to the wayside because it's a lot harder to commit that early when the way the dopamine works is sometimes we want it right now. So it's a lot easier to go looking for things that you can pick up and then have in your hands within a week than something that you are committing to that early. But that's also, I think, an optimistic take that I'm giving is like, I think it's very likely Splendid Yellow Convoy does happen in the next couple of years. And it will probably be that way. But other Transformers HasLabs, I think, are a lot more case by case. Unicron is a way more of a pie in the sky as far as being affordable. I think it's actually pretty likely to happen. But it's going to probably be $1,000. That's just like, you know, I don't think that's cool, but I think that's the most realistic take to have on it myself. And I mean, you look at the size of it, right? of all the HasLabs, that is one of the most complex ones to just assemble, let alone, you know, freight and ship places. But yeah, I want HasLabs to be rerun and done in other colors and split up where possible in you know, the way that they're tooled. Because I don't take any value in owning something someone else doesn't. That's valueless to me. The only value in having something someone else does not have, as far as I'm concerned, is that I can show it to somebody. But then it sucks if I can show it to somebody and the caveat is you also can't have it. Then I'm kind of like bummed out showing it to somebody, right? I don't know. That's sort of a common take in my own circles. I am really not used to encountering peers who are like, I don't want other people to be able to get HasLabs because they're exclusive. Like, I don't encounter that much in the wild myself. I've heard it, but I usually don't respect it much when I hear it.
I don't think that, like, Transformers as a collectible has the same these are equivalent to stocks or bonds mentality that, like, cardboard rectangles have, like with reserve list ideas, things like that, where no, I'm buying a bunch of these to set them in a closet because they'll be worth more in the future for sure. Like, I can't think of anything that would be sensible for.
Even, yeah.
Like, yes, the HasLab stuff has gone up in value, but, like, not enough to really be worth
it. No, it's gone, like, up in value the way that anything scarcely made that has a lot of publicity around it, right, would go up in value. That's just basic.
Yeah, but it's not things where there's as much speculative.
Yeah, value. Yeah.
There's not the secondary, like, you know, trading card games. Like, hey, is this a good card? That has a whole lot of, like, differences in how it can affect things versus, like, hey, is this a good toy? I guess the good toys are maybe worth a little bit more, but not, like, the significant percentages
with
more.
Toys, you can also way more easily find just as many people to tell you, like, no, that toy sucks, there's no reason why it should be more valuable, you know. I do feel I should probably throw in the disclaimer in case, you know, every episode could be someone's first episode. Aaron and me also do not really respect cardboard rectangle speculation either. I won't speak for Aaron, but, like, I used to find it comical. I actually find it insulting now, the amount of seriousness that is provided to that stuff on the stock market level, like on a hobbyist level, whatever, it's fun. Grading should be funny. It should be a funny, neat thing people with money do as a fun thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anymore. And like in the Discord recently, like someone was sharing where there's some Goomba who, like, I hope it's a bit, right? But they're like, I'm the Kabuto King. Look at the value of Kabutos from Pokemon. And it's like, dog, you're buying them out. Have fun sitting on a throne made of 10,000 copies of one common card in a couple years. Cause like buyouts don't work in hobby spaces. That just means you have a lot of a card everyone else gave up on cause you bought them all. Like that's the way that tends to work in my experience.
Yeah. Yeah, the idea that it's worth more because the last one sold for more and you've got a bunch of them, but if you went to sell them all, that value would drop. Good job. That's there's a specific name for that in stock market terms, I think.
Foolishness?
Cornering a market. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because it's like, and I even saw in the comments on that thread where people were like, well, yeah, you've been buying them for any asking price. So, of course, the price has gone up, but you're the one who's been buying them. So, like, you think anyone else is going to? Anyway.
Look, I'm going to make a piece of refrigerator-worthy crayon art, and then I'm going to sell it to myself for $1 million. Now, I spent $1 million, and I got $1 million, so I can just say it's worth $1 million. But now that art is worth $1 million.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I'm going to take out loans based on that, and then this is how we're going to get rich quick.
Yeah, it's. I have talked to someone who used to work in the stock market, with regard to the topic of investing in your toy collection. They have expressed to me that few things have made their eyes roll back into their own head at such volume that those eyeballs actually ejected out the back of the skull. Then people having genuine concern for the long-term value of their toy collection. And someday I hope to do a panel with that person or some kind of presentation with that person, because I think it's a very valuable topic. We aren't Pokemon cards, but we are an adjacent space, you know, and people who are realizing or deciding to just like pivot from Pokemon's card trading to other hobbies, that is a known thing. I have seen people making videos about it. It's become so common. It's a worthwhile topic to try to dissuade people from having the wrong ideas about, and the wrong idea being seriously investing in your collection as an investment. It's like if you're going to do that, then just use the stock market. They already made one of these. It's called the stock market. You can go use that, you know? Anyway, our next question here comes from XL Head. She says, hey guys, been a while. How open are you to shakeups to G1 convections? I think that's supposed to be conventions. This touches right onto that thing about overload potentially being a torso. So, like, quick question. I'm fine with it. But
yeah.
We've seen a couple times where things were changed, like Autobot Megatron, Predaking being his own character, Fortress and Scorponok being regular-sized bots. How would you have changed things, just so it can be slightly different? For example, what if Devastator was an actual separate bot from the Constructicons? If the G1 Predacons answered to Prime Predaking? What if Metroplex and Triptychon were Transtectors and it was Six Gun and Full Tilt being the ones in control? What if the City Commanders actually were City bots? Keep up the great work. Well, I will say, like, as a broad answer, the entire reason Transformers remotely has succeeded this many decades is because of, at least once upon a time, having an openness to those shakeups to G1 conventions. And I think that as much as that has...
I mean, that's Beast Wars. What if it was, instead of waking up in the modern day, it was prehistoric?
Yeah.
Like, the second show did exactly that shakeup.
And these shakeups still happen. As evergreen as everything looks nowadays, those shakeups still happen. They're much more subtle, I think. And I actually put this on the fandom a little bit. I think the fandom has a little bit of responsibility for not reacting to those shakeups with, like, well, why did they do this so often, right? Because you see the same, not the same people, I'm speaking with a very broad brush here, but you see the same, you know, blob of fandom simultaneously lament the perpetual nature of evergreen while also having a visceral reaction to something like, there's a blue robot named Sideswipe in this cartoon, right? And it's like, just be open to stuff, You know, don't be a stick in the mud. I understand that is a part of growing up, and that, you know, hobbies can be, rather than necessarily a way to flex yourself outwards, a way to actually constrict inwards and cling to that which you already know and are comfortable with. But Transformers is a hobby that is very much built around the idea of not worrying about clinging to the aforementioned stick, you know? As G1 as things can tend to look, even in that, there are subtleties where stuff has evolved and tweaked here and there in ways that I think have gone unnoticed by some swathes of folks. This isn't me trying to be like more clever than the rest of the fandom. It's just this is stuff I've just taken note of across social medias, message boards, groups, Discords, etc. The shaking of G1 conventions, this should just be simple, because everything listed here is examples. All sounds great to me. Devastator is a robot, perfect. Merging Predacons with Predacons with Predaking with Predakings, go for it. That should have been in Legacy.
Mm-hmm.
I've had the idea myself of Citybots being more like Transtectors, where there's a little guy inside the brain whose body and nervous system has just been stretched out to the size of a city, and maybe it's making the poor guy go a little bit crazy. So yeah, there's a whole lot of stuff. Like if I were to think of things, I could think of a million things. What if Motormaster was the leader of the Decepticons in some universe, because Motormaster often is a direct rival to Optimus Prime on multiple levels. Aesthetically, it's weird that has not happened really yet. That's an easy one for me. I don't know. Aaron,
the Japanese human scale stuff, Pretenders and Masters being full US English releases, you know, have a series where, hey, it's just a dude, but that's actually, you know, a robot inside of a, I don't want to necessarily be body horror and like inside of a skin suit type of thing, like, you know, to try to do more of what the like cyberverse of, you know, these Transformers are more human scale, human relatable, you know, so that they don't all have to be motorcycles to be human sized.
Mm-hmm.
And instead they're, you know, they're the power core or the brain master or whatever, in order to have human scale problems be dealt with these also car scale things.
I also think it'd actually be kind of cool, even as a one-off story in a continuity where you have Pretenders around, especially specifically the Autobot ones, right? Where, mm-hmm. like, Lander, right? What if there is, like, a story where Lander is Lander the Pretender, but when he's in the Pretender shell, he's still, like, several meters tall, like a car robot, but he's got, like, a human face, and it's, like, a really misunderstanding of what the Pretender tech actually is. I think that would be kind of cool, where they're just, like, giant humans in armor suits. I think that'd be fun. But I mean, I'd open this one up to the listeners, obviously. Like, you know, I'm assuming if you're writing your comment about how we're wrong and G1 should be sacrosanct, I don't know, but like if you have any ideas of like how you can shake things up, like, you know, dump them out there. I mean, even Cyberworld has some cute ones. Like, I haven't seen the episodes yet. I'm really excited to, now that I saw a screenshot that he's in the show. But I love that Cyberworld Galvatron is a small dragon guy with a goatee, where there is also a Megatron. Galvatron and Megatron being existent in the same place in two bodies is a concept I'd like to see more as well. Just like leaning into the original idea of Galvatron being the Decepticon city commander, less so being literally Megatron. I want to see more of that kind of thing, or Megatron and Galvatron being siblings or being a couple. In either case, also being a combiner, like give me some of that. That'd be kind of neat too. But so yeah, this is a wide open kind of question, and I would love to see some user input on this. Aaron, any other concepts you got, or shall I bump us along?
Not off the top of my head.
Alrighty, well, we'll hit 8-bit bricks question then, which is there anything that you are surprised Hasbro or third party company hasn't done? For example, a Transformer who becomes a roleplay sword or knife or something along those lines. Love what you guys do. Well, that's in the realm of knockoffs, actually, where there is the Nerf gun Transformer, right? The large working foam dart gun that turns into like a, what, 15-inch tall Optimus Prime or something. You see it at conventions now and then. It's a very large, funny toy. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I mean, go ahead.
I was going to say, there have been a few very, like... Like, wasn't that Real Gear?
Yeah, yeah. Well...
The original movie
I guess
line?
They weren't swords and knives, technically, but I know what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah, but it was like a controller and a camera and an MP3 player and a different controller and a different camera and a different MP3 player and... I swear there
they
was.
They
kind of
kept
thing,
doing. Oh, headphones. There's also headphones.
Headphones.
No, wait, no, there
headphones,
weren't. That was
yeah.
an MP3 player. I was thinking of the Laserbeak. That was also an MP3 player. Yeah, there were a lot of cameras and phones and because there were a couple game. There's a game controller and then a game console, like a little mini console, handheld.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually just throw back to my 3D print answer. I am surprised, especially some third-party companies have not made replacement. There's some individuals who will make like replacement shoulders and knees for stuff like, you know, Masterpiece Hot Rod, the original with his exploding knees in certain colorways. But I'm surprised that is not a more common thing as opposed to like, no, we just made a new set of arms that are better. And in some cases, I'm just kind of like, I just kind of want someone to manufacture replacement copies of parts that break easy. Like, anything that's known to shatter from gold plastic syndrome or brittleness, right? Like, what if someone just manufactured that part in a different polymer that doesn't chemically unravel the way that some of the metallic swirl ones do? I'm surprised that doesn't happen more out of third-party companies. For Hasbro, I am mostly surprised that they still... I'm not surprised, I guess, but I am disappointed that they still... are going in the direction directly away from stuff like robust parts replacement and organized warehousing of said replacement parts. That's more of me just like yelling into the void against Corpo, but those are my most serious answers, really. It's just I want more stuff that protects the hobbyist and that allows the hobbyist to feel less risky about the things that they are collecting. More replacement parts... replacement parts for things that are known to be fragile. There's so much that is identified and known to be fragile that it frustrates me that that's still just kind of like this ghost island, you know, out in the ocean that doesn't have any mm-hmm. connective land bridges still. That's mine, I guess. I can think of a fun answer too, I suppose. But Aaron, have you got an answer for this one?
I mean... there's all sorts of stuff. I like the when Takara Tomy did some of the like tech things briefly. I still have a blaster USB around here somewhere. USB hub or what was it? There was the Ravage USB key and was it Dinobot mouse or something?
Oh yeah, Dinobot Trypticon laser mouse. It was all a device label. Yeah. I think were those ones.
Device label. Yeah. Yeah. Like a nouveau device label with, you know, make Blaster a USB-C compatible, a real USB-C dock rather than the, like, USB 1.0 power.
Yeah. Yeah, like, especially when a lot of portable tech like that kind of hit a ceiling of sorts. So mm-hmm. it would be cool to see, like, some of the advances in lowered costs and logistics of that stuff. Translate to like a device label, you know, series 2 or device label generation 2. Yeah, that would be kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think for me, I guess it would just be like there have been some really cool toy concepts that kind of never got to be toys. Cyberverse is the one I tend to go to because Cyberverse had Cyberverse Chop Shop, who was a bunch of little bugs that connected together into a biped. That just seems like it was made for a toy that doesn't exist. And the Cyberverse... RID 2015. I crossed the wires there. RID 2015 Chop Shop. And the RID 2015 Stunticons being just loaded with play pattern that was, like, sprinkled out into a couple separate toys that would focus on one idea. But Stunticons where the four Stunticon little guys can all duo combine... like top bottom Energon combined together and then them plus a large Motor Master can combine into a big Metasaur. Like I think that's a really cool idea that I'm surprised hasn't manifested into a toy of some sort from anybody. Having the limb robots being able to self-combine into medium-sized combiner modes, I think, is a really cool concept to bolt onto a five-team or a five-member combiner team. So I'm surprised that it has now been a decade and nobody has done that still. That feels weird. But also another one I would open up to the listenership. Anyone out there who's surprised, someone's going to yell it. So like, also, yes, the animated Constructicons and animated Omega Supreme. It is weird that we're past the 15 year mark on those, I think, now. And they still don't really exist. Those ones I think are likely, but I think that they're likely more so to mark a 20th anniversary in like 2027 or 28. Depending how you want to parse that. But those ones obviously are, on everyone's mind. We've also got a listener question here from Dirge121, who says, "Hello to the team. I've been listening to you guys forever." Okay, not forever, but I started listening when I was 17. Now I'm 34. Isn't time fun? That's, what is that? That's 17?
That's half his life. Half the life.
That's 17 years. And we've been here for half of Dirge121's life. And I want to start by thanking all of you for the ridiculous number of hours of entertainment you've provided over the years. In that time, I've never actually sent in a question, but there's a first time for everything. I know Evangelist has looked into some of it, and TJ bought a few of them, but what are your opinions on Metal Card Bot and its potential release in North America later this year? This was from this year. Do you feel like this is something that could be a real competition for Transformers, or will it get the GoBot treatment? I tried very hard to resist the pull of another toy line, but couldn't stay away from Blast Train and Flame Nova. Those are from Metal Card Bot Season 2. Now I'm hunting for Sky Gallop, Gigant Rex, a Deep Bite, and realizing I could be in trouble. My long overdue thanks again to all the WTF and TFW crew, past and present. Take care and stay healthy. I'm going to flip the script and demand your survival." You can't do that to me. Do you know who I am? But yeah, I'm very interested in Metal Card Bot. I've been a Korean Transforming Robots toy enjoyer, more so from afar, for I think over 10 years now. Metal Card Bot is by far the most exciting one, though. That is God Brave Studio getting to just unleash a demonstrable love for mid-2000s Transformers and the 1990s Yusha Brave series is, and just mash those things together. And Metal Card Bot is where they're getting to do it at levels of budgetary freedom that astonish me. And it feels like they're now just launching the third series of Metal Card Bot in Korea, and they are escalating again on what they are trying to cram into that line. So I am thinking that in a certain world, that would be real competition for Transformers. I think in the 2020s, I don't know that it would be real competition for Transformers, but that is sort of a derogatory on Transformers when I say that, because I feel like the landscape is one where we wouldn't have, for instance, dueling television shows. And I almost feel like we'd barely even have dueling toy lines in this case, because a lot of collector knowledge now is in such a place where the competition is just mostly how much can you spend a year, I guess. So on a very base level, it's there, but it's already there. Because if you know what Metal Card Bot is, you're already trying to budget them in, right? On a larger scale, I think it's actually a great sediment and soil for Cardbot to arrive in, because as far as bringing in new fans, Transformers, I feel, is in an incredibly weak position right now, where it is very built on the back of nostalgia, and the top level CEO management types, executives of Hasbro, are a lot more interested in licensing that IP out to non-toy interests that themselves are often very nostalgia based. I feel like growth is not really, or growth of kids who don't know what Transformers are is not really a high priority for Hasbro Corpo right now, and a Metal Card Bot would be in a great position to take advantage of that. Will it? I'm not sure. Because I don't know how Metal Card Bot's going to distribute its English dubbed television series. I don't know how its toy distro is going to work outside of Agabus.com. if it's only there, that's not going to bring in lots of kids, because a lot of kids probably don't know what that is.
That's the thing that, you know, I've watched a lot of people's videos on Metal Card Bot. I've been interested in it, maybe if somebody locally or at a show had three or four of them for me to really get my hand feel idea of it, to be like, hey, is this something I want to get into? Just because it's another toy line. Yes, they're bigger for the same price, but that's not necessarily like a selling point, because, you know, I really like Diaclone, which is kind of the other
one. Also,
it's smaller for a bigger price. But, you know, it's very much that, and the fact that, like, hey, if I'm having to go to, you know, Agabus.com or pre-ordering it some other place or importing it to get the newer ones from Korea before Agabus gets a hold of them, then to me that's just the same as any foreign import line. It just happens to have a slightly better path into the U.S.
Yeah.
Like,
and I'm really hopeful that do an Amazon storefront, like I believe was said at some event earlier this year, and I'm sure that's got to be part of their goal, because I don't think there is a version of this where the distro company wants to be the sole retailer of the property. That's not a good look for a distro company. So yeah. I'm sure that it's going to be on Amazon or something eventually in the States. There's going to be a better version of
this. But even like, if it's available on Amazon and they do a very good job of keeping, because Amazon right now has continued to have a significant problem with counterfeit product and the like. And unfortunately, with the way that Metal Card Bot looks and without somebody like Hasbro behind it to very solidly keep a hand on the scruff, that's something that I could see a lot of less authentic product get stuck into their flow.
I think the one thing that Metal Card Bot has done to possibly stymie that is simply just release into a lot of other territories. Like, for instance, one of the easiest places to get at Metal Card Bot is AliExpress, because it has actual Chinese releases. I think that probably does a lot to shore up, like, potential counterfeiting, when it's just like, no, we just have them affordably available in China. And it's like, oh, like, what's the purpose of counterfeiting it then?
Yeah, could be. Somebody local bought some games, some board games on Amazon and got
hard. No, board games are dangerous on Amazon.
And and that dipped me into another round of like, hey, so much stuff that like seems as if it could be easily counterfeited is making appearances on
Amazon.
Yeah, don't
buy root on Amazon. That's sort of knowledge I picked up a few years ago. I mean, to be fair, board games also, like, the stuff needed to print counterfeit board games is a slightly more common tech, I think.
Yeah. Right. But it still feels, I mean, I've seen enough of the, like, Mars robots or whatever that Walmart puts next to the Transformer section just in case somebody grabs them by accident because they're concussed or something. Like, that's the sort of thing that I see very easily. Like, hey, Metal Card Bot, and then, you know, plastic cube robot ends up getting like conflated.
You know,
if
Metal Card Bot does take off hard enough that the knockoffs try to mimic the syllabic mouthfeel of the title, a compliment to Metal Card Bot. Like,
but I don't, you know, anymore, man, you know, trying to find. It just feels like the landscape is so much different, even in the last 17 years that Dirge121 has been listening to us. You know, Cartoon Network, I'm sure, still exists on cable, but like, I don't have cable to go looking for it, so this might be my view is different on this, but I don't feel like there's nearly the same amount of, you know, as we grew up, Saturday morning cartoons and things that you had to watch and caught in order to, like, be inoculated into, you know, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles or He-Man or Transformers or whatever. And I feel like Metal Cardbot would have to be extremely outstanding in a way that I don't think ever would be anymore without having already been like, Beyblade stuff still exists because Beyblade stuff existed. Yu-Gi-Oh stuff exists because Yu-Gi-Oh stuff existed. Things like that,
yeah.
You know.
And those things also, like, they have ways of existing outside of their basic media and toy line dealy. Mm-hmm. I was pleasantly surprised to discover Toronto is a very bustling, competitive Beyblade town. I didn't know that that still was a thing. I'd hear about it now and then. But I think, to summarize my own viewpoint a little bit, I think Metal Cardbot is positioned to do very well for a new toy line hitting North America this decade. I don't think it's going to flop unless Agabus does something really stupid. And I don't think they're going to. I know I've seen... The thing I'm worried about that I've seen talk of is, like, oh, we... There was discussion of, like, do we remove the giant eyes from the vehicles and from the robots and make them look more like Transformers? And I was like, that would be the single worst decision you could possibly make for this line is...
Yeah.
Alter their baseline aesthetic to look more like Transformers because a handful of adult Transformers fans said they would prefer that would be the single worst decision you could possibly make. And I have the impression that that's no longer on the table. But if it is, then there is mm-hmm. room for having Metal Cardbot completely flop. If you try to make it look more like Transformers, then yeah, then it will just look like knockoff Transformers full stop. Like, and that would be insulting to Godbrave Studios. That would be insulting to a lot of people involved that I don't think that's going to happen.
That's definitely where I think the place that they have the ability or the potential to make their own mark for it would be to make sure it stays as Metal Cardbot as it can. Because if you just make it like, hey, these are different weird Transformers you didn't get, it's going to be so, like, bleh.
Utterly
you know,
boring.
Because it's not its own thing, you might as well, you know, be getting the third-party Transformers that are more expensive but are more Optimus Prime than, oh, we have this semi-truck that we... also ask for them to paint into red because we know that people like red the computer has puked out that semi-trucks that are red and transform sell slightly better than semi-trucks that are blue and transform. Therefore, the best semi-trucks are red semi-trucks, full
also,
stop.
Also, this is a funny thing I think someone might bring up if we don't. In the past year, Tobot has a construction vehicle / semi-truck set of robot combiner types where the semi-truck is quite literally Optimus Prime to an almost comical degree. Not just the colors, but like the silhouette, everything. It's hilarious. That is a different company. That is a different toy line. But I also want to say, like, I think the Cardbot toys, if they have all the eyes and stuff removed, I think they'd be fine. They'd still be fun. It's just like... Why would anyone who doesn't already know about them be looking at them then, you know? And if you don't like the eyes, what is the easiest thing to solve is cover something up with a sticker, right? If it really is a massive, contentious point between triple digits of potential customers who are also vocal, then Agabus is in a perfect position to connect with someone like Toy Hacks and create window label sets to cover all the eyes, right? Like, mm-hmm. there's so many ways for this to be solved in a fruitful way, if not even, like, a community profitable way that, I'm pretty sure, barring just any kind of, like, you know, screw-ups on much deeper logistics levels, I'm pretty sure Metal Cardbot's going to do fine. I don't know if it's going to do, like, such banger that we're bringing every wave over as well, but I'm sure at the very least... this first wave will be seen as at worst a minor success. So I'm mm-hmm. looking forward to when this actually gets rolling. I noticed, like, I, I'm It will happen, but like, I don't think the plan was to do the pre-orders on Agabus.com, especially given how like that sounded like a very stressful day for everyone who was trying to do so. But I had noticed that Agabus had been kind of like, no, everything's fine, but also a little bit quiet over the past year when, you know, as aforementioned, all kinds of things were happening that made specifically importing product to the United States of America more haphazard and strange to do than years past. And I think that the end result of that was having to take on those pre-orders themselves. I'm just hypothesizing here. I am confident that they are able to figure out something to make all of this smoother should they move into Series 2. But that's all to be seen. So I'm excited to see how all the delivery on this happens next year when it actually does. I still want to own a metal cardboard toy. I keep putting it off because they're like the third or fourth thing I want to pick up when I can only pick up one thing. Hopefully someone out there knows what I mean when I say that. But one of these days, I'm gonna hit up a few. Anyway, we've got a question here from Endertrot. This one I did summarize a little bit. There were a couple extra lines I trimmed out. I kind of based it on does it fit into a Discord post or not. So my apologies if I don't think I left out anything critical. There was just like some ancillary stuff on the end. But this is Hark Podcast Crew. That Gnaw friend I mentioned last time won an eBay auction for an MP1 Optimus and brought up that it's a grail of his, even though it's dated. So I remarked, sure, it's dated, but MP1 should be dated. It's a piece of toy design history. Takara and Hasbro figuring out how to make a high-end collector piece for the first time. And then I said something factually incorrect. Quote, it's basically Takara trying to figure out how to make a Sentinel Riobot toy. As I said that, I realized something was wrong, couldn't put my finger on it, so I looked it up and felt a moment of stupidity realizing Sentinel was founded in 2008 and MP1 came out in 2003. I corrected myself. It's you know, closer to the high-end stuff Bandai was making. Like, that's back when Soul of Jigoken was truly a pinnacle kind of line, and that is very much the space that was being gunned for at the time, to give some context. Question continues, but it got me going down a rabbit hole because I like toy design history, and this made me realize I didn't actually know as much as I thought I did, but I ran into a problem, and the reason for ringing in today, how the, and then Endertrot couldn't remember if we swear on the podcast or not. Aaron, I'll leave this one up to you. Do we throw one in there?
Sometimes we Ido.
Yeah, sometimes we Ido.
Like we keep this relatively clean for Ido 11-ing. Or similar interceptions. If we're doing it live, it gets a little bit potentially saltier.
Yeah, like, I mean, I can throw illegal language in here to be funny and for the editor. Like, how the tariff imports politics. Do you learn about this stuff without being on a Usenet board or forum in the early 2000s? Like, I didn't know, or I didn't do any hard digging yet, but sites like Wikipedia aren't helpful because they're for general knowledge, not the in and outs of high-end action figures, robot toys, and their history. And it hit me. Pretty much everything I know about the subject is just stuff I mentally absorbed from the podcast and Chris and TJ's YouTube channels without really understanding the context. Hell, for a few years I thought Chemical Attack was a company and not a singular guy. Actually, I believe it's a team. It's T-Rex is the guy, but I need to double-check this. I'm pretty sure Chemical Attack is a team. So how should I I need to double check this now. How should I research the history of toy design as someone who wasn't in those discussions when they happened? They also went on to mention that, like, you know, TF Wiki was an obvious place to check, but TF Wiki is very, by intent, tries to stay very siloed on Transformers. So when you start to drift even into things like Diaclone Reboot, it becomes footnotes at best. Anyway, Endertrock goes on to say, hope you're all doing well. Despite the ever-crushing forces of time and brainworms, we still love listening. Stay safe. Ender Lily Trots. So I'm going to go check a thing. But, Aaron, from your perspective, right? Like, because I found this question very interesting. How does someone just learn the stuff we heard, right? Like, how do you...
Man, yeah, that's a difficult one for sure. There's always the joke about go onto Reddit and make a post, or go onto TFW and make, I should say TFW because it's our site before Reddit, which is a very generic one, but make a definitive statement that you know is wrong, and then somebody will come along and correct you, is one option. But man, it's difficult because so much of that stuff is like, kind of you had to be their knowledge, and you might be able to find somebody's personal site where they've kind of tracked some of it. You know, there are a couple of Diaclone sites out there that are, like, that talk about collecting some of those things, but, you know, if you go to, like, the TFW thread for Diaclone...
How many thousand pages?
Some thousand pages, and unfortunately there are still people who are like, I'll just go back to the beginning of the thread and start reading. It's like, dog, I don't have a week.
Yeah, we had this encounter
to find this
when,
thing.
When I got X1 and was interacting with the thread a bit more, and vice versa on live streams, we had our moment of realizing that, like, most of the folks in the thread are actually quite comfortable just going, like, oh, we just use the search functions. And it's like, okay, I mean, that's fine, but that's kind of like, you know, that's, how do I put this? This is not the same thing, but my, it's like, oh, Library of Alexandria is fine, just don't light a match. And it's like, well, yeah. I mean, yeah, I guess, but...
Yeah, if search engines were still good and didn't become, like, AI slop conglomerators, that would be all right.
Yeah, like, well, yeah, what specifically has gotten worse in the last 5 years is search engines. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, oh. Yeah, old Google, where you'd put in your search term and it would come up with, you know, 8 things that perfectly made sense for what you had, and then maybe 15, 20 things that were a step or three out from what you had before getting into just the random, I don't know, and now you get the AI thinks you're asking about this, so that's what it's going to start with. That is very frustrating.
Oh, man, I have an anecdote. This is like tangent, but this is an anecdote I do want to share in a recorded medium somewhere, because this made me really double take. This was on the Flesh and Blood subreddit, where someone came in and said, I don't understand why none of you are building your decks to contain more equipment. Because my understanding of the rules is when equipment breaks, like, you know, you should be able to play out new equipment. That, according to the Google AI summary about the rules that I read, that's what this is. So a lot of the thread was people going like, okay, so the fundamental thing you need to know is that you are describing an incorrect summary of the rules, probably based on one character who does that with one type of equipment. And then the person who posted the thread was just so cocksure about it. Like, they're like, oh, I guess, yeah, I mean, their attitude was not very humble.
I have seen far too many just Reddit threads anywhere in general that have devolved into, well, the AI said this. A fun one to follow is, like, legal advice style thing, where somebody will put their query into Google, and Google will say, you know, oh, per whatever, and they're like, well, Google says that I should be able to go and take a dump in my neighbor's yard due to this thing, and they're like, okay, well, first of all, the stuff that it cites aren't actual real legal precedents, and that's why you hire lawyers. And secondly, you've come here to ask, ostensibly lawyers, a lot of people think that, like, legal advice is just a bunch of cops giving bad advice for whatever reason, but whatever. But, you know, then you're coming to a place of purported, you know, experts around, then asking for or being combative about your question when they're saying, no, I don't think it works that way. Why do you think it should work that way?
Yeah, the AI summary call to authority is one of those things that, like, really makes me twitch, because not even out of anger, but out of, like, horror, right? Like,
yeah. Yeah, no, I feel like there is a weird disconnect in trusting that AI will get it right, when in reality it's just, like, feeding out whatever it hallucinates, and people not realizing that it's hallucinating. You know, yeah, it says things that are reasonable because it knows how to make reasonable statements, but if it's truly reasonable versus just these are words that go together and seem like they would be correct.
Yeah, I'm going to troll a little bit, not to you necessarily, like, just to you know, if the listeners out there, because I always also wince, and it this is, again, a lot of this language has been pushed culturally, right? So it's nobody's fault. But the term hallucinate, I'm always like, oh, you mean it said stuff that's wrong? You mean it made stuff up?
Mm-hmm.
You mean it's saying false information? It's like, no, it's a hallucination. It's like, no, because that's you trying to be kind to a thing that isn't alive. So it's like a triple fallacy of like, there's no feelings to protect, nor are you gaining anything by being nice to it. Also, why are you being nice to the chatbot? You know?
Yeah.
But I want to throw out there, because nowadays there is a good chance we have someone listening who's like, I don't understand what's so wrong about it. So the way I like to explain why it is worth perhaps just scrolling past the AI summary on a Google search result, right, is number one, demonstrably, that AI summary could be wrong in either minor ways or mm-hmm. critical ways. So usually one says, well, I look at the sources it cites, because it still, I believe, provides footnote citation links, and I check those links, and it's like, okay, so I have this suggestion, which is like, what if you scroll past it and then just check the links that show up anyway? Because if you need to check
right.
the links to confirm the contents of the summary, are you not just adding a step that mildly may confuse you before doing the thing you were going to do with the search engine in the first place? And that is why I often recommend to folks who find the AI summary to be helpful, but sometimes, you know, it messes them up. I'm like, at least tally up the number of times it's messed you up and you had to go back and, you know, mea culpa when you check the links, and consider mm-hmm. that maybe it's making your life harder, and it's designed to make you feel good when you use it. So you think your life is easier, but mathematically that may not be the case. Your life may actually be harder as a result of this.
But so as it goes for Endertrot, you know, try to find a search engine that doesn't include a bunch of AI hallucinations, and try to find stuff of that time frame. That's part of the fun of our currently kind of hiatus, you know, history dives. Since Chris has had his multiple throat deaths.
Yeah, it had to take a brief yawn to make way for, you know, grand noble Dahir Inshot to fill in a spot for 6 hours.
But, you know, going through those and even finding stuff that, like, is just, you know, sources that are AWOL that weren't even necessarily old sources that have gone AWOL in the intervening time frame, like... It's a difficult prospect, but it potentially could be found, and then hey, maybe you go through and document everything Endertrot and make a post on some forum that might hang around or something of that sort.
Go and find, collect, and save as the treasure they are, any time that someone mm-hmm. has translated and just posted an interview with a designer in, like, a hobby magazine, a Generations book, etc. Those are always good sources of info. Obviously, you know, and this has a limitation in that you're asking people for info, which is, like, that invites human error. But you can always ask folks like me and TJ and etc., like, hey, do you know the connectivity between this team and whatnot? Like, I just looked it up.
And that's a thing as well. Like, find some Discord or some, you know, toy arc on TFW or something like that that's toyetic, and say, like, hey, I've got a question about thing.
Yeah.
And was anybody around during that time? And, you know, maybe you'll find somebody who's like, oh man, I was big into the Sentinel stuff, let me tell you.
Chemical Attack is a team, by the way. I'll share how I did it. I did a search. I did the thing to make Google work the old way. It's like some back end stuff. So I did a search, which was Sentinel Riobot Chemical Attack Team, because for the Riobot line especially, the ad copy often confirms designed by the famous design team Chemical Attack. So that's an easy one, because they like to advertise that team in some of their ad copy. But T-Rex is an individual who specializes in articulation design. I learned that sort of under the table, but I believe that's been also shared publicly a bunch of times. I do think it is kind of spooky how a lot of toy collecting knowledge that is remotely niche has fallen entirely into spoken word only for the most part.
Yeah, and that's the rough thing, especially, you know, the more niche it is, the more likely that is to happen, because you had eight people that cared about it or something, and then, hey, maybe it comes up later on, but those eight people have now left the fandom that was, you know, feeding itself with excitement, and it just becomes lost info.
Yeah. And I mean, and this is another thing that I think sadly can contribute to it, is I've noticed on YouTube especially, there's a lot of protectiveness of stuff as spoken words, so folks will rewatch the video, basically. And that's and also that viewers are subsequently culturally kind of trained to not really write anything down, just go like, oh, I heard it in a video once. I'm part of the problem there. Like, I say I heard it in a video once constantly. But like, we do have resources out there, like Aaron Archer regularly podcasting on YouTube. And I think it would behoove someone to do some note taking of that stuff, basically. Not to replace the episodes, but just so there is a hard copy, right? Kicking around.
Yeah, and then the other rough thing is there are some Wikipedias and the like that are out there that would potentially be good for it, but because they have specific requirements for how they will prove documentation on things, I know that that can also be rough. I saw somebody talking about a thing, about something in a video. I forget what it is. It's been a while. But it was like the guy was on Wikipedia specifically trying to correct something, and they're like, no, source it. And the guy's like, it was literally me. I was the one that was there doing the thing. How do I source this? Do I need to make a blog post on a blog that I create in order to say what, you know, who was at my Thanksgiving when this specific thing happened? Like, you're going off of a story, off of a story, off of a story. I can, like, do I tweet it? Do you want me to tweet this out so that I can then quote my own tweet for this? And the person being very upset that, like, hey, there's firsthand experience, but because it's not documented, it doesn't count. That sort of thing is another thing that makes it fun and or difficult to document.
My understanding of Wikipedia culture on any wiki is that the editorial culture that developed on original Wikipedia and thus informed, you know, fan wikis since then is a blessing and a curse. It's a very tight ship. It's a shield against a lot of misinformation, but it is also personality-driven bureaucracy at the worst of times. And that's what you cited there was a great example of when that can happen. It does not follow protocol, and for better and for worse, Wikipedia editors, the ones who really are into it and stick around, among the personality types they can attract, it is my understanding that they can attract people who want everything to follow protocol, to a fault, and can wield that as a weapon if they're having a bad day, for instance. The solution to that is not to say, like, you know, demolish Wikipedia's standards and practices. It's just like,
yeah,
that's worse. But that is just that's going to be a foible, I think, of wikis in general, because it's just part of the wiki editorial culture. It's part of the bedrock of that stuff when it first was invented, and I think it's something you have to try to navigate. And so, yeah, if you do have someone who literally was there, it's like, you know, write an article about it and have that article posted somewhere, and then point at it so it can be a footnote citation. Because that's the thing I think that they are probably hung up on.
But you can't self-publish the article, because then it could be biased. So you need to get somebody else to publish your article about specific things. Yeah.
And it's for the footnote citation. And I get it. Those things are super great. Mm-hmm. But it's like what I'm talking about, where it's like, against reason, it's for the footnote citation.
Yeah. And that, unfortunately, is where some of that old knowledge just falls apart and disappears.
Yeah.
You know, it just, you'd think in this day and age, we would be able to have perfect, documentation maybe isn't necessarily the right word, but perfect continuity of information and knowledge. But until there is infinite data storage that is entirely trusted or something, it won't happen.
And to be fair, like, we're also in an era in North America where the veracity and quality of information is under, like, direct attack at times. So, like, I understand the difficulties, and I definitely understand why the arbiters of standards and practices in spaces like wikis would want to really triple down. It just makes for frustrating scenarios where, like, you might say, oh, can the TF Wiki have, like, a Diaclone offshoot because it's such a relevant thing? Like, Diaclone Reboot is so sibling to Transformers, and it's like, no, it's a Transformers Wiki, and it's like, all right, like, I get it, but it's frustrating. Because, like I said, me and Aaron, like, I'm the one, I feel like I just ran into it headlong where I was like, I only have 2.5 places to research anything, and one of them seems to be a semi-automated translation of the Japanese website, for better and definitely for worse. And so, like, this isn't good. This isn't good knowledge sourcing, right? Like, this is the minimum at best. But, yeah, I mean, and it goes without saying, my door is always open if someone, like, is curious about something and they think I might know it. I'm happy to try to answer. But, you know, obviously the caveat is I'll be going off memory for the most part. And I try to be clear that I'm always, like, ready to be corrected on this stuff. It's just, like, at my own sort of defense is, like, if you aren't going to correct me on this, like, I would kind of like to know where you're coming from. Because I have been corrected before where someone then told me, like, oh, I was actually, I misremembered this. Or, like, you know, oh, I corrected you, but I was basing that on something where it turns out I was wrong. And it's like, okay, well, well, then we have an issue there, right? Like, that's... it's a propensity I find in the current culture to do what I would call shooting from the hip at full volume. An easy place to see a version of this that's a lot more harmless is if you ever watch a Twitch streamer who plays a video game and they have backseaters, right? I have seen people state with confidence the most wild nonsense from a backseating position where they are insisting just... open the lid. Just open the... If you don't open the lid, there's nothing... You have to open the lid. I know this. Open the lid. And then eventually be like, I opened the lid. There's nothing in it. And the person who was yelling that stuff will be like, okay, I guess I was... I've never actually played this game, but I just figured that was a good idea. And it's like, okay, well, what was with the confidence then? anyway. I hope that answered the question to some degree. Because, you kind of have to just learn how to do some good searches, figure out who seems to know some stuff and is happy to talk about it, and also get those people to talk to each other in public scenarios. I think that would be a thing to do as well. Get some of us to brain share in a recorded scenario where we can fill in each other's gaps in our memories if we are able to. That's another idea I think that could be cool.
Mm-hmm.
That about does our list of listener question catch up. So I think that we're set. Hopefully I apologize to Bees. Hopefully Bees was able to edit out. I very suddenly was having a coughing fit for that last bit.
Yeah.
That's happened to me once or twice during the sickness where, like, I'm fine. And then the top of my throat suddenly goes like, hey, what if 3 hours of damage out of nowhere, and I'm just like, so that was a little bit irritating, but maybe that's also a signal that I've talked enough. I'm not sure. Aaron, people should check out our Extra Life link, shouldn't they?
They should.
They should.
We are still fundraising for the remainder of the year, and starting probably January 1st of 2026, we'll start a new Andy Ruse Gaming Gang team because for whatever reason, Extra Life requires us to make a new team every year and get people to sign back up into it. And then we'll have a new year of fundraising.
It's so goofy because now they let us keep our individual pages. I don't understand why the team page can't stick around.
Yeah, it's they keep your... Well, it...
I can see why that would be the case. It just feels weird.
I've got documentation on my individual pages going back to like my first Extra Life.
Yeah.
So like as a user, you keep your information.
Sorry, I mean the URL.
The URL. Yeah. Well, you were able to request a shorter URL than your participant number.
Yeah.
And that was just like an improvement, I think. But the team page, like I can get it because I feel like if people were just auto included and auto signed up every time, then there would be bad feels of like I'm being forced to do this now because it auto populated it for me or something. Mm-hmm. And away we go.
Yeah. Either way, we will be set up either for the remainder of this year or for next. So hit that up. And I can't remember. I think we cold opened so hard I forgot to actually say that TJ had something come up on his end, and we were in discussion, and he basically said like just go run with the two of you. So that is why it is just the duo today. I realized about 20 minutes ago. I was like, did I actually say during the recording why there's the two of us
here? It was just the two of us.
So I don't know if Bees, if you want to bump that to the front as well, or say something up there, or whatever, or make it a fun surprise for people. That is, I leave that open to the editor. Either way, thank you all for listening. We will, as you can tell, we will always be back one way or another. So stay safe out there. Have a happy end of year festivities, whatever it is that you do. Maybe in those festivities you even festivoose and you do the airing of grievances or whatever the thing is. Do people still talk about that? I always wondered if that thing ascended, where people talk about it and then find out later in life that it's from a sitcom.
I don't know. I would hope that anybody that talks about Festivus knows that it's the sitcom thing, not like a ancient
escalated thing. Notion. Just like when I was 2 years old, my parents told me about the Festivus stick or whatever, it's a family tradition. But yeah, stay safe out there, and we'll talk to you later. Have a good one, you lovely people. Kisses, mwah! Saliva.
Yeah, you don't want that kiss with what he's got going on right now.